All these things go together so well. Storytelling and then videography, podcasting, social media, content creation, and printmaking, the physical work we can do with our hands and the technological work that we can do on our devices. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it all like does fit together in such interesting ways.
Hello, print friends, and welcome. This is a bilingual podcast, so if you subscribe to us, you'll be getting episodes in English with me, as well as in Spanish, with Ronaldo Gil Zambrano. Together, we speak to people around the globe about their practice and passions in the fields of print media and multiples. This episode of Hello, Print Friend is brought to you by Speedball Art Products. Speedball is thrilled to announce that they are extending their range of beloved oil-based block printing ink, partnering with Hello Print Friend host Ronaldo Gil Zambrano. To give the line a fresh new look, they have launched 10 color-rich options in convenient 8-ounce sized cans. The ink is formulated to be permanent, waterproof, and archival, but provide easy cleanup with vegetable oil. Available now to purchase through Speedball's website. This episode is also brought to you by Legion Paper. Legion Paper is a fine art paper company that represents the best papers in the world. They either stock it, source it, or make it. With brands like Stonehenge, Somerset, Coventry, Reeves, Arches, and more, Legion is the best paper resource for every artist and printmaker's needs. Learn more about the variety of papers Legion stocks at www.legionpaper.com. My guest this week is Hannah O'Brien. We talk about day-to-day life on her sailboat named Phoenix, and printing in a small and moving space with her curious kitty named Roger. We also talk about the complexity of caring deeply about sustainability while having a commercial art practice, going viral on Instagram, and much, much more. Hi, Hannah. How's it going?
It's great. How are you?
I'm really good. Thank you for joining me. I'm really excited to chat with you about your life and your printmaking and your perhaps unconventional printmaking life.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for having me. I'm psyched to be here.
So before we get into everything, would you introduce yourself and just let people know who you are, where you are, what you do?
Yeah, so I'm a printmaker located in Vermont, up in the Northeast, and I actually became a printmaker only about 2 years ago. My background is mostly in sailing, so I was working on boats for a while. I was a boat captain, I was a deckhand, I was a sailing instructor, I worked at a sail loft, like all these sailing, boat, water-related jobs. And then I got my own sailboat and I sailed down to Maryland for the winter. And that's actually where I started printmaking because I didn't know anyone in like the whole state of Maryland and I didn't have a job. And so I started carving block prints, and that was a little over 2 years ago, and that is when I started my printmaking business and just took it from there. And now I'm back up in Vermont just for a couple of years to regroup before getting back out on the ocean, hopefully.
Yeah. And then where did you grow up and what role did art play in that part of your life?
Yeah, so I grew up down in Boston, and a lot of people will ask artists often, like, when did you become an artist? And it's always a kind of funny question because it's like, you almost like never stop doing art. If you do art as a kid, you just keep going. So I was always an artist. I was always really into painting. When I was in college, I took an art minor and I focused a lot on oil painting, and that was really awesome. And then like throughout, after college, I was bouncing around a lot for boat stuff, and in every like apartment I lived in, every like random little spot that I lived in, I would always have like a little corner that was like a painting studio. Mm-hmm. The reason I got into printmaking was because painting on a boat was just like really hard, especially oil paints, like with ventilation and with space. And I have a cat on board, and mm-hmm. I like oil painted one time, and immediately her nose was like in the paint, and it was a mess. And so that was like my one attempt at oil painting on board, because you have to like leave stuff out to dry in the paint, and it was hard. So, but yeah, my background was mostly in oil painting, and I did it a bit in college, but I didn't like study art in college. So yeah, I'm mostly self-taught.
Yeah. And what about your family? Were they artistic or crafty or any influence from that?
Yeah, my mom is like very artistic. She's also, she's always ran her own businesses. And so she's a small business owner. So I get a lot of the like wanting to support myself through my own business from her. And I think my sister would, I have a younger sister who's a jewelry maker. But she's also like a million other things. She loves crafting. She like was really into sewing for a while, and she's also really into painting. So she's also an artist. And I think we probably get that mostly from her mom.
Yeah. Yeah. And so tell me more about coming to sailing and, you know, how you ended up doing it full time. I think all of that is really interesting. And let's see, I want to ask this in a way that is like, not offensive at all, but like coming to sailing as a young woman, because I feel like people think of sailboat, they think of a 60-year-old retired guy who was in finance, you know? And I think, you know, you're younger, you're artistic. You might buck that trend a bit, what people associate with someone who's living full-time on a sailboat.
Yeah, absolutely. And thanks for pointing that out. That is like, that's very true, but thankfully, it's really changing. Mm. There's like a lot more younger people and especially younger women are getting into sailing, which is awesome. I got into it by accident. I guess not by accident, but there was a sailing center down the street from my house growing up. And in the summer, they offered like a free summer program to kids in Boston. And so for my parents, that was kind of a no-brainer. Uh-huh. It was like a free summer camp. And so I started going there when I was about 7. It's called Courageous Sailing. It's in Boston, and it's like really an incredible program. I learned how to sail there, and then I started teaching there when I was about 15. And I was a sailing instructor there for, I think, like 6 years. And at that time, it felt just like a random, fun summer job, like in high school and college. I didn't really think that it was gonna take me anywhere. Like, mm-hmm. I thought it was just something to do in the summer. But then when I graduated college, I had no idea what I wanted to do. I studied environmental science in college, which is something that's still really important to me, but it was so broad. And of course, you know, I never thought I could actually like be an artist. That like, for some reason, felt very unrealistic. But so when I graduated college, I was like, well, what do I know how to do? I know how to sail. And I found this job as a deckhand on a boat up here in Vermont. And that just kind of like really snowballed. The first year I was a deckhand, and I was having a conversation with the previous owner, and he was like, you know, this is a viable career path. Mm-hmm. Like sailing, it you might not realize it, but like you can get your captain's license and you can go in so many different directions. And that was the first time that I really thought about sailing as like more of a viable path. And so that next winter, I moved to Maine. I got my captain's license. I went back. I captained for that same company for the next like 5 years. I worked for them for about 6 years. And I still am like very, very close with that company. And so, yeah, it kind of all happened. I always say like a little bit of accident, a lot of luck, mm-hmm. honestly, and a lot of privilege. But yeah. And then I ended up getting my own boat 4 years ago or 3 years ago.
Yeah. Yeah. Congratulations. Yeah. That's very Thank cool. You. Very cool. So for people who don't know, what does a captain do?
Yes. Yeah. So there's a lot of different things a captain can do. Basically, you need your captain's license. It's a U.S. Coast Guard issued license if you're going to be taking paid passengers on a boat. Okay. So what I did, I was working for a charter company. Yeah, I guess I didn't explain this. It was basically a company that takes people on 2-hour day cruises. So we would do a bunch of 2-hour cruises all throughout the day, you know, show them a bit of sailing, show them a bit of the lake of Vermont, talk about the history of the area, stuff like that. And so that was what I was doing for that company, was a charter business.
Okay. Okay. Gotcha. Mm-hmm. I bet you have some interesting stories from that. I can just imagine like anytime you're dealing with the public, But then when you're dealing in the public in a context of your in an enclosed space like that, that, you know, that is a sailboat and that thing, I can imagine that, especially after doing it for 5 years, you'd meet all kinds of people. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. That was, I think, one of the most interesting parts of it was meeting all these different people. And like a lot of the art that I make now, a lot of the prints that I make now come from that time, just from the, like, the experiences on the water and like the stories we would tell and the stories that we would hear, because our story repertoire was always building. I'm just sure. From like the experiences and the people. And yeah, it was a very cool experience for sure.
Yeah. And then, so you got your own vessel. Tell us about that. Tell us about Phoenix. Like what, yeah. tell us her dimensions, you know?
Yeah. So Phoenix, for anyone who knows sailboats, she's a Hans Christian 33. So she's a 33 foot sailboat. She was built in 1986. She's fiberglass. She's like a very tubby, thick boat. She's a blue water cruiser. So that means that she's an ocean going boat. Having her up here in Lake Champlain feels a little like not right in some ways.
Her.
It's like,
yeah.
she deserves the ocean, and she'll go back there soon. But yeah, I bought her in 2020 actually from someone who I knew from that company, the charter company. Yeah, it was a kind of scary purchase. I don't know. It was an interesting, like, I got offered this boat. I thought it was, you know, I thought it was the best opportunity ever. And then the pandemic happened and I was like, what am I doing buying a sailboat? And like, so much is unknown, but thankfully I did it anyway. And have just had a really great time learning over the past 4 years. It was a steep learning curve because I had my license and I had been sailing for a while, but I had never owned a boat or like anything like that. I owned my car that I like didn't know how to take care of myself at all. So all of a sudden having like all these systems on a boat that were up to me to really maintain and stuff, it was very intimidating, and it still is a lot of the time, but I've learned a lot from that boat, and I love her. Yeah.
So tell us a bit about day-to-day life on a boat when you are, say, out in the ocean.
Yeah, so I haven't actually done too much cruising yet. The longest passage I've really done was I sailed from New York City to Baltimore nonstop, and that was about 56 hours, the longest I've done on Phoenix, at least. And day to day, it's such a fun question because there is like no such thing really as like a normal day-to-day life on Phoenix, because it's very different whether I'm at anchor for an extended period of time or on a dock for an extended period of time, or if I'm on the water, like sailing for like the trip that I did to get down to the Chesapeake, the New York City to Baltimore took about 56 hours, but the whole trip took 2 or 3 weeks. And on a trip like that, it's kind of like a lot of paying attention to the weather, a lot of navigating, like figuring out when the best time to make a trip is, like based on tides, based on wind, stuff like that. And then where you're going to end up, knowing if there's a place to anchor or, you know, stuff like that. And then it's a lot of just like, I don't want to say doing nothing, but a lot of just like kind of taking it all in. There's a funny saying that sailing is like 95% utter boredom and 5% sheer terror. And that's kind of true in a lot of ways. There's a lot of time just spent like, you know, taking in the elements and enjoying just like the flow of it and kind of just contemplating stuff, contemplating life and like paying attention to your boat, obviously in your course and stuff like that, but just like really mellow, like contemplation.
Yeah. And at 33 feet, can you solo a vessel that size?
Yeah, because of how she's rigged really well that, like, I barely have to leave the cockpit, which is, okay. like, the enclosed back part of the boat, in order to, like, raise the sails and lower the sails and, like, adjust the sails and stuff. So I've done a lot of solo sailing, and I've done a little bit of solo, like, overnights and stuff. But for a longer trip, like when I went down to Baltimore or stuff like that, it's a lot nicer to have another person on board, especially if you're doing, like, overnight sailing. You take turns, like, take shifts on and off. And that's, you know, with the trip from New York City to Baltimore, that was vital. I couldn't have done that by myself.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
So solo apart from your cat or?
No, she's there too. she's the best crew member. She's funny. She doesn't really ever come out of the cabin when we're sailing, which is really nice.
Yeah.
Because I don't have to, you know, worry about her at all. But, like, I remember when we were sailing from down the coast of New Jersey and then back, just any overnight trips at all, when I would take my 2 hours off, I would always go get in bed, and she was always just, like, there purring, waiting for me. And, like, we would always joke that she was such a morale boost, but, like, morale on a boat is, like, almost a safety concern. Like, it is so, so important. And so to have Roger, that's my cat, there just, like, being such a happy little presence, it's, like, it's really important.
Your kitty's name is Roger?
Mm-hmm.
That's so sweet.
Yeah, she's a girl, but her name is Roger, like, Roger that.
Cute.
Yeah.
That's really sweet. That's so interesting that you say about morale being a safety concern. Mm. I have I don't know if it's esoteric or not, but I don't know where it comes from, but I have, like, a real interest in early Arctic exploration, which has a lot of stories about morale on ships in it. And in that really, really extreme condition, you know, I feel like that's it's very obvious how morale is a safety concern. If you're trapped in the ice, or if you want to have a mutiny, you know, 236 days into a voyage or something like that, like, that's all part of those very dramatic stories. But I would imagine, you know, even on a trip from New York to Baltimore, is it just kind of more, you know, staying alert, staying, you know, being able to get up after maybe only 2 hours sleep? Is it kind of in that context?
Yeah. I mean, and in general, just like on any trip that I've been on, a big part of it is, like, taking care of your mental health, because sailing, and I've found, especially, like, as captain, as the one in charge, as the person making the decisions, you have to keep a pretty clear head, and there's a lot to pay attention to. And so physical health and mental health are just, like, become so important to your decision making and stuff like that. It's like, especially on a trip like that with weather, and, you know, especially with a lot of bad weather, just, like, it's decision after decision, and this, like, decision fatigue can set in. And so, yeah, keeping your morale up in that way, it's, like, helps to be able to keep a clear head, helps to be able to, yeah, be making those constant decisions.
Yeah, yeah, because I think it's kind of hard for people to fully know, if they haven't really done it before, what it really feels like to be a small little object bobbing around on the surface of an ocean.
Yeah, it's also funny because it's like, even if you have done it, you get this, like, weird amnesia of, like, you only remember the good parts. And I've heard this from a lot of other sailors, and now I've experienced it, where, like, you're in the middle of a passage and you're just like, I'm never doing this again. this is awful, like, especially, like, a really challenging one. And then 2 weeks after, you get back on land, you're like, oh, I can't wait to do that again. It's so weird, but it's really, it happens. It's so funny.
That's so interesting. And to bring it back again to my most intimate knowledge of sailing, which again is 19th century Arctic exploration. But you, I feel like you kind of hear that even in those captains. You know, they'll go on this really harrowing experience trying to find the Northwest Passage, where they barely escape with their lives. And then 3 years later, they're back on a ship again doing yeah. it. And yeah, so what yeah, you say that helps explain it, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's so interesting.
So in terms of morale and mental health, does art and art making help with that as well? Does that come into play for it for you?
Yeah, definitely a bit. It's interesting when I am in that, like, almost like stressed out decision fatigue space, I actually don't really find myself making art. Like I have a tough time writing. I write a lot, but yeah, creating art, it becomes a lot harder. But I feel like that's almost when I start to like take in other art, and that can be, you know, in the form of like distraction, like scrolling Instagram, which is like maybe not the healthiest habit, but it can be really helpful to like help turn my brain off. Or even like when we were stuck is a loose term, but we were like waiting for a weather window in New York City on that particular trip. And we were there for like 5 days, and I ended up going to a bunch of different art museums in New York City, which was like an amazing experience because I got to like go home and sleep in my own bed at night, but then like explore this city that had so much art. And so like turning to other people's art and other people's just like expression during the times when like I can't necessarily like have the energy to express things myself is really helpful, especially because it's weird. Like a lot of people, when they are super stressed out, will turn to art as a form of like release. And like, that doesn't really work for me. Mm-hmm. So yeah, turning towards like other people's creativity and like just like feeling connection there.
Yeah. No, that
can be really helpful.
That makes a lot of sense. Cause I think that, you know, everyone has a different creative practice, and that idea that you are able to make work when everything else is kind of functioning in you, that makes a ton of sense for me. You know, like yeah. I definitely connect with that. I am a bed rotter in times of stress, you know, not yeah. let me journal this out. Let me write some brilliant poetry. It's like, nope.
Yeah.
Unproductive and just exactly. cocooning is yep. yeah, that's what I'll do. So mm-hmm. yeah. And, yeah. and so when you do make work on the boat, when you do come to printmaking, how did you discover it? Was that through social media? Because you said you mostly had done painting, you're mostly self-taught. At what point did you say, no, I'm going to get some lino and some Barons and some ink and bring it on board Phoenix?
Yeah, I think, well, I had done printmaking one time in high school. That was the first time I did it, and like the only time up until 2 years ago. So I had like held the tools before, I had carved out a print. And I still have that block, which is really fun. I found it. My mom had it at her house. I found it like a year ago. So I had like, I knew of printmaking, block printing. I knew like what it was like. And I have no idea what possessed me to buy the materials again. You know, sometimes things just like, I can't remember what was going through my head. I was at Michael's, like the craft store. And I bought just like the little kit that has like the speedball carving set and the brayer and one or two blocks. And that was during like the summer of before I moved down to Maryland. And I just held on to them. They just like sat in the boat for like 5 months. And then again, I don't really know what it was that provoked me to pull them out once I got to Maryland, but I just started doing it and I made some really bad blocks. Like I carved some really like not great stuff, but it was so fun. And just like, it was something to do almost. And I really struggled learning how to actually do the printing on board. Like, there's not a lot of room. And so I was trying to figure out how to, like, print without a press. And so I was, like, using my body weight. I was, like, using my water bottle to, like, roll. Like, I was rolling my water bottle over the paper to try to, like, transfer the ink that way. And, like, it was really smudgy. And it was just a lot of, like, experimenting because I had the time and space to do that. And and then I totally just ended up falling in love with it. It was very, like, I really liked the, like, graphic look of it. Mm-hmm. The clear lines and the contrast. And I also liked how when you're drawing, it's very, like, almost it's like you want to have a steady hand, or you, like, want stuff to look just right. Whereas when it's a block that you're carving, you can sketch and mess up and change as much as you want. And then, I don't know, something about it, it's, like, almost easier for my brain to figure out a carving than it is to, like, do a drawing.
Yeah.
Even though there's drawing involved.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. I think people definitely have different wiring, for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, and so what's your strategy for printing and being pretty prolific in a small space? I'm not sure everyone listening would ever be printing on a sailboat, but some people are in small apartments, you know, that kind of thing. Do you have any tips or tricks that you picked up about creating a studio with such kind of extreme limitations on not only space, but of course also storage on a sailboat?
Yeah, storage is a tough one. And it was actually kind of wild when I moved off of the boat for the first time after, like, a year and a half, or, like, almost 2 years on board. I somehow realized that I'd, like, accumulated more stuff than I had in the previous, like, years of living on land. So I have, I've, like, gone through a lot of trial and error. What I use for printing, I know this is not video, but I have a spoon, like a regular tablespoon, and that's really just what I use for transferring the ink, and that's what I've found to be the best tool. And then, you know, over the past year, I've, like, really tried to expand my color palette, and I just, for some reason, keep coming back to this, like, dark blue color. And so I've decided that, like, that's just for now. That's what I'm called to. That's I'm going to get rid of the rest of my ink. Or, like, I have other friends who are printmakers, and I'm just going to give it all to them because I don't use it. And so I'm in the process right now of, like, narrowing in on, you know, the tools and materials almost, so that I can expand on, like, the content of the work. Because, yeah, I've heard that from other artists. If you limit your materials, that's when magic starts to happen. And so I'm in the process of doing that now, of just not trying to be fancy with my color palette or with my tools, and, like, really just focusing on the image.
Yeah.
The design.
Yeah. And so, you know, making and working and living on the boat and doing all that, that's one thing, but you're also documenting it. You know, you've got a really strong social media presence, and a lot of your videos are really informative and really well shot. And sometimes you can tell that the camera is set up where it looks like maybe you have someone on the boat with you, or maybe you've just, like, stashed it somewhere. And so I guess I'm a bit curious about how that kind of fits into everything and how that fits into life on the sailboat. And then also, is that something that you think you got from your mother being a small business owner, that it's all part of marketing and entrepreneurship? Because it is, I think it gives people the sense that they really are a part of your life. There's something about the way that you document it that you really feel like you're on Phoenix with you and Roger, and, you know, you're coming along for the ride.
Yeah. Thanks for saying that. It's a lot of work, honestly. Like, I always laugh when I look back at the videos of me sailing, like, when there's all the shots of me pulling the sails up. It's like, getting the boat getting all the sales up takes like 3 times longer when I'm trying to film it because it is just me usually. And it's like, I have all these really random spots that I've found that my phone can be positioned to film myself, because for the most part, when I'm filming myself, I am by myself. Like, I'm still pretty uncomfortable with like asking other people to film me or like filming other people, because people aren't always psyched about that. So when friends come sailing with me, I typically don't film anything. And same with like down below, all the shots of me like making prints and stuff. I've actually found it's easier on the boat because there's all these like ledges and stuff that are meant for grabbing onto. Like, there's handholds that my phone just sits in really perfectly, or like anything filmed from above, the way that I have a hatch, which is kind of like a skylight right above me. And like the way that the screen can, like if I position the screen just so I can set my phone on top of it, like just perfectly. And so I found all these like weird little hacks for filming. But I do think that, yeah, documenting it comes from like the idea of figuring out how to like market this and like tell my story. I think storytelling is so interesting, and it's something that I want to like get better at and learn more about. And a lot of social media, like quote unquote marketing, is just storytelling. And so, yeah, it's something that I have fun with and like would like to take a little bit farther.
Yeah, because you mentioned storytelling when you were captaining for the charter company. And
yeah,
I think that if you're drawn to storytelling, I do think it can translate to image capturing and video capturing. And I say that from personal experience, that I was somebody who was just really, really into storytelling, and, you know, in the early 90s, just thought The Moth was the most incredible idea ever, this storytelling as art practice almost. And then, you know, when I make videos for the Hello Print Friend feed, it's the same thing, where I'm really thinking about like, okay, how is this being communicated and how is the information being doled out, and is it interesting and would it hold my attention, and all that kind of thing. So it's, even if you don't have a background in videography, I think storytelling can be the motivator.
Yeah, absolutely. And like all these things go together so well. Storytelling and then videography, podcasting, social media, content creation, and printmaking, the physical work we can do with our hands and the technological work that we can do on our devices. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it all like does fit together in such interesting ways.
And at any point, does it ever feel oppressive at all? Like you're like, oh, like I have to, you know, create some content, or I haven't posted in a few days. And again, this is speaking from my own point of view as someone who has a pretty big social media presence. And sometimes I'll be doing something or going into a museum and I'll think, oh, I really should create some content from this. And that it is, it creates a little bit of a barrier, of course, from like being in that experience, maybe in real time, or maybe not. Maybe that's like an artificial idea that I've put onto to what it is. Maybe it's just being there in real time in a different way.
Yeah, it is really interesting. I don't usually find that like filming feels like, oh, I have to do this, or like it doesn't feel so much. My cat's running around. It doesn't feel so much like a block, but the editing of it, of those videos, that can often feel kind of hard. And I think a big part of that is from like the amount of time I spend on my phone, not for work, and like the social media addiction that so many people have of just like, sometimes looking at a screen for so long makes me like really feel just like not great. And I felt that a lot with, I started a YouTube channel like right at the beginning of the summer, and I was really excited about it. I was really excited about my first few videos and like about growing it. And then in June, at the end of June, early July, that was when I had the video go viral on Instagram, and it just like changed the course of my summer, the course of my business, the course of everything. And at that point, I remember like kind of really being overwhelmed by a lot of things, but then being like, okay, I have to sit down and edit this YouTube video. And it was just taking so long. And I was looking at my phone. I was like down below on the boat for like 3 hours straight, just like trying to edit and without much editing skills too. So I was like on my phone doing this and it was just kind of a mess. And at the end of it, I like came up into the cockpit, like out of the cabin, and there was like all these boats. I think it was a Sunday afternoon. And so there was like a lot of boats on the water, and there were people like water skiing, and there were like people sailing. And I was just like, what am I doing? This feels like so wrong that I've just like spent hours like in a screen on the boat. And so that can be kind of challenging. And I did really enjoy it. And I would love to bring the YouTube back when I have like more of a capacity for it, because I had the capacity, but I just had so much other stuff going on. But I want to be more mindful of that, of like, yes, sometimes like I do have to work and be on a screen for a long time, but also like there are other important things.
Mm. Yeah. And so with the YouTube and how it's distinctly different than Instagram, I would guess that you would be creating longer form content essentially.
Yeah. And it was, I only ended up making like 4 videos. And it was something that I was doing by myself. So I was like shooting the videos and then editing them and like coming up with all the ideas and stuff by myself. And that was really challenging. I think in the future, I wouldn't do it on my own again, I guess, maybe. I mean, never say never. But yeah, longer form, it was definitely a bit different than just like the short Instagram reels.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And was it still like, this is my life on a boat, or what was the YouTube content?
It was all boat related. So like the best parts of living on a boat, the worst parts, that's about as far as I got. It was like the best parts and the worst parts. And then I had all these ideas for videos, but then yeah, my summer kind of like devolved after that.
Yeah. Yeah. I want to make sure we've got a bit of time to talk about sustainability, because you mentioned that was your educational background. And I know that you even offer some resources like PDFs as well.
Yeah.
And just kind of how that fits into your life. And then also I'm curious about how it fits into boat life. Like, is boat life more sustainable in some ways?
Yeah, it is. And I'm so glad you brought that up, because like my whole perception of all of this is like so rapidly changing the more that I learn and like the more that I unlearn. And so this month, like the month of January, has been filled for me with just like, I almost feel like I've gone back to school. Mm. I've just been like learning so much. I've been like reading so many books, and this is like the first month I've had to just like slow down, because summer was really, really busy. And then the holiday season for me was really busy. Like as an artist, that's when I make the bulk of my income.
Yeah, yeah.
And so that was kind of all I could literally afford to think about, was like how to make enough money to be able to sustain myself through the winter. And now I've had the chance to like kind of push the brakes and really slow down and really like think about what direction I want to take my business in and like stuff like that. And so I've just been like doing a bunch of research on, yeah, like sustainability and just like the climate crisis, the environmental crisis in general, and like how we all fit into that. And I think it's way more nuanced than like I once thought, obviously. I mean, like as we're learning, I feel like we're always kind of looking back and being like, whoa, I didn't really know what I was talking about a year ago. Mm. And I'm starting to feel like that with like certain things around individual action. So like living on a sailboat can be very like low impact, I guess. Like I'm completely off grid. I generate all my own power. We have to be really careful of the water we use, because we only have so much water in the tanks. You know, you want as little trash as possible, because it can be challenging to figure out where to get rid of trash when you're sailing. And so it's like you use a lot less plastic. And those are all great things. And like I definitely encourage, like, in whatever ways we can, we should figure out how to, like, curb our consumption. And especially, like, in my lifestyle and in, like, my upbringing and in my, like, social circles, like, we are high consumers. The lifestyle that I've always lived has been, like, such a high consumer lifestyle. And, like, that is something that I don't think the planet can sustain. Mm-hmm. So I do, in some ways, like, think that individual action and, like, our consumption, that, like, that needs to change. But on the other end, it's, like, structural change is so much more important. And, like, climate justice is so much more important and more, like, I don't know. I'm shifting my focus to that because of how interconnected all these systems are.
Mm, yeah, I definitely know what you're saying, because I think particularly if you grew up as an 80s baby or as a 90s baby, the rhetoric at that time was all about individual responsibility. It was like, you're killing the planet because you're not recycling, and you're burning down the rainforest because you want to eat meat. Well, actually, that one still is more. Actually, that one's still true, but okay. That one's still good. That one still slaps. Yeah. But, like, it was. I remember as a kid in, like, 1992, feeling so much like I was killing the earth, right? Because, like, there was a plastic bag inside my Cheerios box, right? And I do think now, as we're learning more, we're like, okay, is it the fact that I use Q-tips, or is it the fact that there are industries that are producing massive amounts of carbon and that is just on a scale that we can't even conceive of, you know?
Right. Exactly. And so it's interesting to think about, like, because the individual action things, like, don't use straws and, like, don't use paper towels and, like, all those things, they feel very, like, you can accomplish something.
Right.
Like, okay, like, I'll stop using straws. Check. I did something good for the environment. Like, mm-hmm. We fixed it. Whereas, like, fighting these systemic issues, that a lot of things are not likely to change in our lifetime. And so it doesn't give us this, like, feeling of, it doesn't, like, feed our ego as much. And so it's more challenging to think about, okay, like, where do I fit into that then? But it's, like, more important almost that we think about it that way.
Mm-hmm.
Or I guess, I don't know, more important is a interesting way to think about it. But, like, it's just different. And I'm trying to figure out, how does that fit into my life and my business? Because, like, business is inherently, like, has to do with all that. So,
yeah. All of those are such good and interesting points and ideas. And I think about it a little bit in the context, too, you know, where business of providing experiences, which is what charter boats do, and how, in a way, that does seem pretty climate friendly, you know, as opposed to, I'm going to spend money on a product that had to be produced, that produced waste when it was produced, and now it's in my house, and when I'm done with it, it's going to go in the garbage. Like,
right.
That tourism and spending through experience, I've been thinking about that a lot lately as a more friendly way, a more planet-friendly way to do consuming.
Yeah. I think that's true. It's like, it's definitely, like, an interesting thing to think about, like, product-based versus, like, experience-based. That, like, leads into the question of, like, where does that leave product-based businesses, mm-hmm. kind of? And, like, I run a product-based business. Like, I sell art prints, and that's, like, a physical product, which is something that I've been very much thinking about, like, since I started selling art prints. And since I was a kid, really, like, my mom, she has a children's clothing store. And I've always kind of, like, thought about, like, the, like, product-based businesses and how they fit into, like, the, environmental crisis, but also just like consumerism and stuff like that. And like experiencing the holiday season, like this past holiday season was so interesting for me because I was just like simultaneously having to like sell as much stuff as possible to fund my winter. And at the same time being like, is this right? Like, I feel kind of weird about this and I don't know. I don't know. It's all very, it's interesting to think about and talk about, but like, I don't have any answers yet.
Yeah. And it's a conversation I've had with other artists and, you know, maybe particularly people who are in the business of multiples, right? Because you're using more and your physically more objects are leaving your studio as well.
Yeah.
And most of the conversations I've had, and at least my personal view as well, really does come down to that idea that we have been brainwashed a little bit, that the earth is dying because of the little decisions that we make, like using Q-tips and straws and paper towels. And we need to balance in a responsible way the fact that, yeah, that does affect things, but, you know, do we deprive ourselves art making? Do we deprive the world our art when it's just this microscopic in the grand scale of things, ecological sin, particularly when we do have power ish to try and take on, you know, larger issues like pipelines and burning forests and, you know, things that are truly massively affecting the health of the planet.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. And I'm very much in the process now of trying to figure out how to do that. Like how to shift my art so that it's not just, you know, images of sailboats, which are beautiful. And like, I think there is a very, an important aspect of art that is just like bringing joy. Mm-hmm. And like I have a series of small cat prints that are just like funny. There's like a scuba diving cat, there's a pirate cat, there's a mermaid cat, like there's surfer cat. They're like, they're funny and people love them. And that's important. I need to like remind myself like that is important too. But also like, how can I use my art for like a more powerful change almost? Like something beyond just what it has been for the past 2 years.
It's interesting you're talking about the prints that just bring joy, because it brings me back to this idea that morale on a sailboat is for safety. And I feel like you could almost extend that to the entire world in its own way.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's so interesting. Totally.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we do need to have self-care and physical and mental health, because it is really rough out there right now. So
yeah and we need joy. Like joy is powerful.
And I, you know, at least personally, I can speak to the fact that when I am in joy is when I am most likely to not consume mindlessly. So I think really famously, capitalism profits on making us feel lack, making us feel alone, making us feel helpless, because then we try to control by purchasing. You know, I don't look the same way I did at 22. So let me buy this $70 a month subscription to collagen, you know, that kind of stuff.
Exactly.
Yeah. Or anything like that. And it's just, it's in our bones, at least I think in the States, particularly. I think this other places, maybe not quite as much, but it's really in our bones to go to consumerism as a balm for whatever is ailing us.
Right.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of the future and of positivity, what are you looking forward to? What is on the horizon for you?
Yeah. Lots of stuff, I think. There's a lot of boat work that I have coming this spring. I have some pretty big projects that I have to do on Phoenix to get her ready to hopefully be leaving the lake again, which I won't give like too many details because not everything is like decided yet. Yep. And also, like, I don't know, when you live and work and travel on a boat, like, things are never set in stone. Like, you can make a million plans and they can all fall through. So hopefully, though, I'll be leaving the lake pretty soon again with Phoenix. Continuing printmaking, hopefully getting more into like the video side of things, maybe starting back up YouTube. And then, yeah, seeing, like I was saying, like where I have some fun ideas for the next couple months of my art and like where I can bring all these different aspects of like living on the boat and like boat life and art and activism and environmentalism like all together.
That sounds perfect. So,
like TBD, but like
yeah,
I have exciting things in the works that we'll just have to wait and see for.
And where can people find you and follow you and see all this cool TBD content?
Yeah, so mostly Instagram. I'm at sailingvessel_phoenix on Instagram. And that is like where almost everything is. Any links to like my Etsy shop, to my website, to all those things are linked on Instagram. So yeah, that's the easiest place to find me.
Beautiful. Well, I will put a link to that in the show notes. And thank you, Hannah, for sharing your story and your prints with us. And I look forward to continuing to follow you and Roger on Phoenix.
Awesome. Yeah. Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
If you liked today's episode, we have a Patreon where you can help support the podcast and get bonus content like Shop Talk Shorts with past guests. But the very, very best thing you can do to support this podcast is listen, rate, follow, and maybe share with a fellow print friend around the world. And that's our show for this week. Join me again in 2 weeks' time when my guest will be Diana Varma, host of the wonderful podcast Talk Paper Scissors. She and I talk about how print is most certainly not dead, how we learned what was cool before the internet, form versus function in typography, and Pantone Barbie. You won't want to miss it. This episode, like all episodes, was written and produced by me, Miranda Metcalf, with editing by Timothy Pauschak and music by Joshua Weber. I'll see you in 2 weeks. We'll be right back.